Welcome back to episode 199. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Tim, and I want to report that I'm COVID-free officially.
Wow.
I was tested.
You were tested? Really?
I was tested, yeah. My mother...
oh, you had to go... Yeah.
Yeah, she's in a retirement home. She's 92. Under California restrictions, you know, you would have to see her from the parking lot across from her building. So it's been brutal, very bad on her health. But under these different color codes, now we can actually be in her presence, but we have to be separated by about a 10-foot table. And of course, she can't hear anything. She's very, very deaf. So this is not a, you know, a satisfying experience. So anyway, now they will let you be in her room alone with her, if you pass their test. This is not the, you know, jam the thing down to the brain test, but it's just a little white swab that you administer. And you're just kind of supposed to roll it around inside your nose and then give it back to them. I was careful not to touch anything with it inside my nose. But anyway, so I gave it back to them. And then 10 minutes later, and I was waiting, and it reminded me of the bad old joke, you know, that, well, the good news is, you know, you're negative for COVID, but the bad news is you're pregnant, you know. I mean, it's a...
love these 10-minute tests, huh?
Yeah, 10-minute. It was a 10-minute test.
Science.
And then I got an official little card, which is not, I don't think, they're not qualified to give anything like for the passport categories in California, but it just enables you to go. And so it was interesting, you know, if these tests are reliable, they're very uninvasive. I mean, they're just, you know, you do it yourself, first of all. And because you're in the inside of your nostril, you're still sort of in the area where the body's exterior protection can keep you from viruses and bacteria and bad things. You know, it's like when they inject you or when they stick the Schwab into your brain.
Yeah.
You know, these are getting past the, you know, the protective layers. And so I wanted to be with my mom. I hadn't actually, you know, been physically next to her, you know, so this was kind of a good thing. And so I did it. And now I have another, I think, 3 days I can, before I have to take my next test. So I just thought I would
Every 4 days you have to take a test.
Every 4 days, yeah.
So basically you're COVID-free, as they see it. And then, so you, for 3 days you can visit your mother, then you have to take another test.
Have to take another test. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I could also get vaccinated.
Oh, so that, cause they could hang that out.
Yeah. I could
dangle the vaccination.
And then that would satisfy the same thing, but I told them that I wouldn't. And the person, the administrator guy, he said, why not? And I said, because I think it's a death blow and I don't want it to be anywhere near me.
Why not?
And he goes,
don't you watch the...
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, so he said, you know, I agree with you. We had to take it or lose our job. So, you know, he says, but I don't want any of that new RNA in me, but we had to take it, you know, and it's just sad, but this is just the world we live in, huh?
Yeah, I don't... I mean... If you have any concerns about it, why would you take it just to keep your job?
Search me.
I mean, that talk about short-sightedness.
Well, particularly, I mean, when the Biden administration is increasing the you know, the largesse, they're having an enormous problem getting employees because people are all, you know, getting the government checks.
And they can't. I mean, to say you have to take this emergency use authorization experimental mRNA gene therapy drug that we're falsely causing, illegally calling a vaccine, or you lose your job. To me, there's probably a legal case there, but
Of course. I mean, of course there is.
you
It's just,
know, it's.
no, very few people would fight that. What there should be is lawyers who are taking like a class action suit approach.
Yeah.
That would be, and they could try to create a general injunction to keep all of their clients from being fired, with the one judicial decision. So these things should be done, but they're not. The resistance is very, very chaotic. In the United States, much more organized in Europe, particularly Germany. But for us, the United States, it's kind of state by state. The Florida governor is saying that he thinks the lockdown were in general a really bad idea. That's heartening to hear. And there are a lot of states, of course, that are have taken the position they're not going to do vaccine passport concepts. So
Yeah, the state governments are still somewhat representative, and I think you can still get some traction there or some response there. The federal government's a lost cause, I think. And that, so, I mean, there's a lot of like nullification laws being passed regarding things like gun control laws and mandates. I think Texas has its own gold reserve now. Which suggests they might be looking, thinking in the long term here. And so it's, as the, again, as the federal government becomes more, I guess, tyrannical or ridiculous in many people's opinion, it's gonna lose legitimacy in the eyes of a lot of people, and perhaps lose its ability to coerce. And that's when things get interesting politically. But it's very, I think the situation is much more politically fluid than people realize. That's true with any revolutionary period. People don't realize they're in a revolutionary period.
That's right. And I thought one statistic that was very heartening was that 40% of the Marines have refused to take the jab. And you coined the term the few, the brave, and the hesitant. I thought that was amusing. Yeah,
The
it's kind
few,
of,
the proud, the hesitant. Yeah,
that's
Marines. But that's, yeah, and maybe those are the white supremacists that the Pentagon is trying to purge. They don't have
Well,
the right attitude.
you can see that the white supremacists are the ones that are going to be sort of the will be certainly a large fraction of the final group, the last standing cadre. I don't know if you've got the advertising budget that Biden has created to go after like a kind of a proletariat whites. He's supposedly, I mean, I haven't been able to verify this, but I was sent this information. He's got over $100 million to advertise the virtue of the taking the vaccination in NASCAR races and country music. See, Tim, you have to follow the science, if you're going to.
Well, if Toby Keith is to getting the jab, I figure it must be okay, because he's a good old boy.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I thought if you'd questioned me like 4 months ago, I would have said that there really wouldn't be much problem with the vaccinations up front because they'd be designed to make sure that the maximum number of people that they could possibly get, to take it would, and then the way they would design it is that the real lethality would come like a year later, year and a half. Now that still might be the case. I would kind of imagine it is, but wow, there's just been so many people getting sick and dying from this thing.
Well, the cancer
Just
epidemic didn't break out in, what, 20 years after the polio vaccines were rolled out. So.
yeah. I'll just give another anecdote. I've got about oh, I'd say 30. People that I know personally who've taken the jab, in spite of my efforts. And four of them got really sick. I mean, sick to the point that they couldn't go to work or do anything. So that's an amazingly high fraction, far greater than the flu vaccine. So this thing is really toxic.
Yeah, and again, all for a, again, it's there's no emergency, there's no pandemic, 99.9% survival rate under the age of of 60. That's it's like there's no there, but again, you wouldn't, a real pandemic doesn't require 24/7, commercials and propaganda campaign. It's
Well, yeah,
a
well,
pandemic will sell itself, so to speak. It's going to be readily apparent.
a
But a
real
psychological
pandemic.
operation does require such a thing.
Yeah.
It's a, just look around you. No one knows anyone. No one knows anyone who actually died of it. It's not a, there's no increase in death. There's, the hospitals aren't being overwhelmed. But, again, we've talked about this. It's just,
Right. I
you put,
mean, people have heard this from us, but I will point out that it isn't much of a pandemic if the median age of death from the disease is the same one as the general population.
Yes, I think in
And it's
Ireland, I think it's the average death is 2 years above the expected life
right.
expectancy.
I mean, when you
So,
are at or beyond the average age of death, you're really not much of a threat, are you? You
yeah,
know, I
I
mean,
think
it's
they
just.
reported 65,000 infections, I think below the age of 21 or 18, no deaths. For
Yeah.
that, they've shut down schools and shut down, social life and stores and pubs. They've destroyed pretty much what remained of Irish culture. The churches are closed. I mean, then the Vatican is silent on this. I mean,
Well, the
they've shut
Vatican is
down the church. They're arresting
pro-vax
priests.
and is
Yeah.
talking about the vaccine as an important humanitarian right that has
Yes.
to be given to all of the poor people, and it's the moral obligation of the faithful to, help them, be positive about taking the
Yeah, and
vaccine.
the bishops are, are saying it's licit because, well, yeah, somewhere along the line, fetal tissues were used in the experimental process. So it's a, let's go ahead and take it,
Yeah, I mean the Catholic Church is shot. I mean, sorry, I know you're Catholic. I was raised Catholic, but I just feel that the Freemason Pope and the majority of the College of Cardinals are absolutely compromised. They took that over decades ago, and so that's why I have said and have tried to communicate to him, to Bishop Vigano, to just declare yourself the Pope.
Well, I think every institution, every meaningful institution has been obviously infiltrated because there was no resistance to this obvious operation.
Yeah, it shows that, it's incredibly, the breadth of the political and media control is astonishing. It's absolute, but the depth of it is a veneer, and the main thing to resist is just to develop skepticism, because the whole purpose of the political purpose of creating the political control that they have is propaganda. I
Well,
mean,
it's just
it's.
an, they've created a cult, and it's the, that's the term that C.J. Hawkins came up with. He's that playwright, and he's the one that came up with the idea of the COVIDian cult, and that's the perp function of this mask. People pointed out that, the masks don't work. Not only do they work, they actually hurt because they did a study, and they, then studies, and apparently, if you wear the mask long enough, you're not taking enough oxygen. In fact, it violates OSHA regulation if you're at a place of employment. Yet, and the best way to deal with this, if it exists, or any respiratory disease, upper respiratory disease, is vitamin D, so outdoor activity, sunlight, and proper oxygen intake. What does sheltering in place or locking down and wearing masks, what does that inhibit? Well, exposure to sunlight, vitamin D, and oxygen intake.
Yeah.
But then the Fauci, well, we have no evidence that masks work, so let's wear two masks. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, you really wonder if they actually are just engaged in mockery at this point, that it isn't even propaganda. They don't even care. I mean, the idea of
It's.
two masks, somehow, have you ever put two masks on? You can't breathe at all. You can make
No,
it for
and the
5 minutes.
whole idea that if you, the whole idea of disease in general, and this is something, this, I think people get sick for multiple reasons. I don't think it's the germ out there that gets inside you and you get sick. I think it's much more complicated. There's a lot of factors. It's your diet, your overall health. Are you fatigued? These things. It's the, the terrain issue, which seems to make the most sense. But people, and if their bug is out there, gets in and gets inside you somehow, they're all around, according, to what the official narrative is. So you really think putting on a mask? Then I've read an article about what's in the mask. Is the material is actually a carcinogenic if you breathe it in your lungs. So if you're constantly wearing these things, and of course you're reusing these things, so it's going to be worn out. Material is going to, particulate matter is going to come off it as you wear these things out. And you're going to breathe it in, and if it gets in your lungs, it can get you, make you really sick. You can get some sort of mesothelioma or something because it gets in your lungs. It won't be diagnosed as such. It'll be some other thing that caused it. But yeah, I have maybe I don't know. Maybe a couple of years from now, there's going to be an epidemic of lung disorders because of this. I saw
Yeah.
a person jogging down the street wearing a mask by himself,
I just love that. Yeah.
and it's,
Yeah. You
you
know,
know, so.
there's an interesting lawsuit. It's coming out of a bunch of immunologists. And they claim that, and these are from universities, they're all university guys, and they're suing the CDC. Because they've tested 1,500 samples of people who are supposedly positive for COVID-19, and every case they found was influenza A and influenza B. They couldn't find any COVID in any of the in the samples. They had 1,500 samples, and they used the old classic. I don't know. I think it's probably with microscopes, blood. But they couldn't find any of the any COVID. So we'll have to see. It's the Dr. Kanas. That to me is very promising. Hopefully that this could get out because the disappearance of the flu. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the media shills like this pathetic. Dr. Z Dog, he's this media trying to be hip kind of thing. You probably haven't seen him, but he'll be on the talk. He's a talking head, and he'll claim that, well, the reason that there's no flu is that COVID drove it out.
That
It
doesn't make any
drove it out.
sense.
No, it doesn't. I mean, first of all, if you look at like LA, there was less ICU bed use than the prior year where there was flu. So you could imagine if COVID was 100 times greater than the flu in terms of infection, that, well, okay, there's maybe you could explain it that way. But when it's less, how could a smaller number of infected people with COVID drive out the flu, which has been established for over, well over 100 years in Los Angeles? It always comes back at these times. So this was just
But
propaganda.
what's the obvious explanation? Obvious is they're attributing, what are flu or flu-like ailments to COVID and calling it COVID so they can get the numbers up. But they admitted that because, well, one of the things is hospitals under the CARES Act and other federal programs are being paid to have COVID patients. So they're going to declare them to be COVID patients. The same way, you got more if you put them on a ventilator. So they killed people because just to
It's
get them
old
more
news,
money. I
but
mean.
yeah, we need to keep mentioning this stuff because this, I think, hopefully, gives clarity to everyone about the nature of the vaccine
Yeah, you
that
have a patient
there is.
dies, you put COVID on the death certificate, you get money. If
Yeah. So,
you're a hospital administrator, what do? Well, it's obvious if you think if you're a
it's
bean
COVID,
counter.
of course.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, you're not going to
But
care
it's
about
just
the,
that.
it promoting a hysterical thing and that's going to result in the destruction of Western civilization. You got a quarterly report to meet. Did you see a thing? Mayor Garcetti, Los Angeles mayor, said that LA is in good position now because of COVID relief bill that was passed in March. They can meet their, they have all these programs planned because all the money they're getting, from COVID relief. So you shut the economy down, put everyone on welfare, more or less, destroy real estate, retail, and declare victory because you're getting money from the federal government, money that's created out of thin air and borrowed at interest, by the way. And that's
Yeah, this
how,
is the same thing. Yeah, my supervisor, I just was barraging him with data and news stories and things, trying to get him to go public. And he would correspond with me, and it would look like, he was paying attention. But at the end, he just said, well, there's limits to what we can do because Newsom controls the federal dollar purse strings.
Yeah, so it's all
So
about money.
that's how they did it. They
Well,
didn't have the
that's about
governor.
putting everyone on welfare, more or less, with relief checks,
Yeah.
making everyone so you can hold that out. That's basically it's ever pays the piper calls the tune, and this is typical, client politics, approach. You better get everyone, everyone on the federal gravy train. They're not gonna do anything that upsets that, that train from running, keep running, and you get everyone. That was that, a couple months ago, I mentioned what happened in Maine when the Republicans were trying to get the Democrats, who control the legislature there, to rescind the emergency powers from the governor. And they basically the Senate Majority Leader, Democrats, said, "Well, we're not going to challenge the emergency because it might compromise our access to COVID relief funds." So they maintain the state of emergency just to keep the money coming in. In the meantime, they're destroying retail businesses, people's livelihoods, keeping everyone on welfare.
Well, you have to follow the science, Tim.
Someone just said, when someone sent me that Garcetti piece, I said, "Well, it's not follow the science, it's follow the money." That's how we understand this thing, at that level. That's how you get all these so many of these tin horn dictator politicians going along with it. I don't, they're not going to Davos, they're not being briefed. Although I do think, that a lot of state governments are compromised. If according to Jesse Ventura, who was when he became governor of Minnesota back in the 90s, was it the nine, late 90s?
Yeah.
He was introduced to his CIA handlers. It's an interesting story. So,
Yeah, I remember. But I think that the you can kind of see which ones are in the secret society guild. I think all of the mass murderers are. I think Christie and Cuomo. I mean, these guys, the ones who are putting patients into hospice and retirement homes to build up the body count. I would imagine those are all guild members that are, they don't have to be coerced or anything. They are just acting out of guild malevolence, and we're perfectly happy to murder a lot of old
Well,
people.
yeah, I mean, someone like a Cuomo who graduated from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which was ground zero for fraud in the I guess it was the 90s and early 2000s, but that was part of this, the money that went missing there, the hundreds of billions of dollars went missing with mortgage fraud. And so he did such a bang up job, he was promoted to governor of New York there,
Well, that helped grease the skids for all of this benevolent immigration our country has benefited from over the last 70 years, didn't it?
It's all part of it because they want to, flood the country. Before we get into that, back to this vaccine, we had a interesting take interview with on CNN with Dr. Leanna Wen. She is during a March 10 appearance on CNN. Former Baltimore Health Commissioner Dr. Leanna Wen discussed how to overcome vaccine hesitancy among the population. She says that we have a narrow window to tie reopening policy to vaccination status, she said, because otherwise, if everything is reopened, then what's the carrot going to be? How are we going to incentivize people to actually get the vaccine? We need to make it clear to them that the vaccine is a ticket back to pre-pandemic life. So that's why I think the CDC and the Biden administration needs to come out a lot bolder and say, if you are vaccinated, you can do all these things. Here are all these freedoms you have, she said. So
Yeah.
basically, she's saying it has to be kind of held out to like the carrot. And I guess we're all a bunch of mules, I guess. But
Isn't it ironic, Tim, that that the rationale isn't avoiding a disease?
no, it's yeah.
I mean, it's funny, isn't it, that she would have to find other carrots, another because no one's buying, or at least the people who are. I would bet anything if you took a poll of the truly hesitant, that you'd find over 90% of them just think that the epidemic is BS.
Yeah, she goes. So that's why I think the CDC and Biden administration needs to come out a lot bolder and say, if you're vaccinated, you can do all these things, and here are all these freedoms you have. Because otherwise, people are going to go out and enjoy their freedoms anyway. And I fear a situation of coming into the fall where we never reach herd immunity. Yeah, right. And then we get hit by a next surge of COVID-19 in the fall, something we could all prevent it if we just got people vaccinated now. So, It's got to, be held out there. Of course, as according to Dr. Fauci, is if you do get the vaccine, you do not get to enjoy these freedoms. That is a lie, because they say that even if you get the vaccine, you still have to, be socially distanced, wear a face diaper, and so, of course, and from what we can tell, the vaccine, of course, doesn't offer freedom or health.
No, of course not. But I mean, the analogy she used is a perfect one. It's the carrot. Well, you
Yes.
never get the carrot. If the donkey never quite gets the
Never
carrot, it's
quite,
always
he
in
just
front
keeps
of him.
walking. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is the idea, is to the freedoms are right there. You can go from three masks to two, and soon down to one. But you never quite go back, because that isn't the plan, obviously. And so they will put the carrot out there. But you see, I've been saying this now for a couple months. I think that, I mean, she's obviously, I mean, malevolent and probably just a very profound idiot.
Yeah,
But
she was a I think an officer of Planned Parenthood as well. She was the former, the director of health of Baltimore, and also director of Planned Parenthood. So that's her,
yes,
where she
that's
comes from.
her CV. But the thing is, the hesitant aren't going to buy the carrot. So this is the problem. I don't think they can really, get to herd immunity, to use an expression, because the hesitant are simply too aware. And this is, when you think of the numbers of the truly resistant, it's got to be probably 20, even greater. Who knows? Could be as high as 50. I mean, there's all kinds of guesses about it. But you're not going to get these people to take the jab with, promising them that they can, go to a health club. I mean, they're just not going to do
It's also
it.
ham-fisted. You kind of say, oh, what is this? This is blackmail.
excuse me. I mean, there you have it. They're going to, take all the low-hanging fruit, the mindless, the frightened, and the impotent, the old people. And now what's left is going to be a snarling, angry mob, that I just, it's just as I said, this is such a unique moment in history, because the purification will have made the group that is left, stronger, I think. They'll be more willing to, they'll say, to hell with your job, to hell with, these restrictions. They'll be prepared to fight, I think.
Yeah, of course, the CDC. This is the headline. CDC: nearly 6,000 people infected with COVID even after getting vaccine. So there's that. So much for good health and freedom. The Center for Disease Control has reported that roughly 1,500 people who received the coronavirus vaccine still ultimately came down with the disease. Anyway, according to CNN, of those 1,500, 396 of them, roughly 7%, were hospitalized. 74 of them, 74 of the vaccinated people ultimately died. The report proves that the vaccines, though frequently touted as by the government and the media, are not guaranteed to prevent everyone from contracting the virus. Vaccine breakthrough infections, they're called, were reported among all people of all ages eligible for vaccinations, CDC report details. However, a little over 40% of the infections were in people 60 or more years of age. Nearly two-thirds of the infections, 65%, were among women, while 29% of the cases were asymptomatic. Then we also have, oh yes, here we go. This is nevertheless, the CDC still recommend that all eligible people get the COVID-19 vaccines as soon as one is available to them. The CDC also continues to recommend people who have been fully vaccinated should keep taking precautions in public places like wearing a mask, staying 6 feet apart from others, avoiding crowds and poorly ventilated spaces, and washing their hands often. So much for
Where's the
the.
carrot,
Where's
Tim?
the carrot? It's not much of a carrot. Here, now the states with the highest rates of vaccination and mask compliance feeling heaviest load of new hospitalization cases. This is from Natural News. Comparative data on differing Wuhan coronavirus COVID-19 responses across the nation is finally being released, and things are not looking too good in states where rates of compliance with mask wearing and vaccinations are the highest. In Michigan, for example, which currently leads the nation, in the Chinese virus vaccine compliance, hundreds of new positive cases have emerged among people who got jabbed in order to save lives. At least three deaths have been reported among those who were vaccinated. The Michigan state government is scrambling to spin the news any way it can, including by linking the deaths to other cases, other causes rather, besides the Wuhan flu injection. Some officials are claiming that the new cases must have been lingering infections that were present before the person was needled. So this is dying with COVID-19 vaccination, not dying of the COVID-19 vaccination. I guess you can make that
Yeah,
distinction.
I don't know if you did you read the trial data from Moderna and Pfizer? I mean, this the vaccine they talk about like a 90% efficacy. It's just a statistical mirage, you know. I mean, this is their own best case, the one that they used to get the emergency authorization. You know, they say, well, you know, like eight people in the vax group got COVID and 90 people in the non-vax group. So we're at 90%. But of course, if you look at it as a percentage of the population that was vaxed, it's like not even one half of 1% is effectively prevented. And then when you get into the criteria of like, well, what is like a sick person? You know, how do you tell? You know, you have the PCR test, which is nonsense, but then you also have the epistemological illness of like, well, chills, or fever, or you know, like hallucination. I mean, so the specificity of someone who is ill is so not there that of course the actual trial data don't mean anything. I mean, the increase or the efficacy of preventing death was zero because nobody died in either group during the trial. So it was zero on both sides. And then going to the hospital, they said, well, we had a 75% efficacy. Right. That was because three people on the placebo side went and one on the vax. Now, notice, so this is actually, if you look at it, it is two out of like 40,000 people. But this is also what you'd call in statistics a random walk, because if one person on the placebo side had somehow gotten on the vax side, one person, you would have no efficacy whatsoever for preventing illness, right? So the data is just so nonsensical as far as being something concrete you can believe in. It's all, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Except as a cover, for something really, really malevolent. You know, it's
Well, I
funny.
mean, when you have a program called Operation Warp Speed, obviously they're not going to dot every I, cross every T. That's the whole point. It was sped up, so they're not going to be able to have any good data because you simply can't get data in a compressed time, you know,
Right.
because
They're going
you've
to get
skipped all
data,
these.
but it's going to be over a 3-year period.
Well, it's, you know, that joke that's the two lab rats talking to each other, and one lab rat says to the other, "Are you going to get the vaccine?" He goes, "Heavens, no, not yet. They haven't finished with the human trials." You know, and that's what this is the trials. That's, you know, so yeah, you're a guinea pig. Of course, we had a another police shooting incident. This happened, I believe, in was it Minnesota again, I think, or
I think so,
Wisconsin,
yeah.
Wisconsin. Dante Wright, he was shot accidentally as he resisted arrest after he was pulled over for, I think, expired tags. Dante Wright was allegedly, he had a warrant out for his arrest at the time. He was shot and killed by a Brooklyn Center police officer near Minneapolis, I'm sorry, Minnesota. This was on Sunday. Wright was due to face trial on charges of attempted aggravated robbery with a possible maximum sentence up to 20 years in prison. The charge stems from an incident in December 2019 when Wright was then 19 years old and a second man named Emma J. Driver, then 18 years old, allegedly visited the residence, a residence shared by two women in Osseo, Minnesota, and tried to rob the lady of $820 at gunpoint. I think his bail was revoked in July of last year, July 2020, due to his failure to meet with his oh yeah, I like that this is due to his failure to not possess a firearm or ammunition and not keeping in touch with his probation officer. So he violates probation. So he's out driving around a car with suspended tags. He gets pulled over. Then he resists arrest, and this lady police officer accidentally shoots him, thinking she was had a taser. So he's accidentally shot, supposedly. But he was trying to get away. He had struggled with the cops. If you saw the videotape, there was a black officer, rather burly black officer, big guy, who was handcuffing him. For some reason, he hands it over to this woman, who that's when Dante immediately tries to get away. And he gets into the car, struggling. And I guess she thinks she has a taser, and she fires it and kills him. He drives away and bleeds out and dies. Of course, we just have an incident where if he simply complies, he'd be alive. He's not complying, but this becomes another pretext for protests and Black Lives Matter stuff. And everyone's talking about it being racial. Of course, you look at the tape, it's a black guy arresting him, a black cop arresting him. But again, just another case where you have a black guy resisting arrest, creating a dangerous situation. And then when it goes wrong, as predictably it would, it becomes this issue, another media event. Of course, the media initially lied, saying he was shot, he was unarmed man shot for no reason. Well, if you see the videotape, he was resisting arrest and trying to get in the car and escape. And of course, at that point, the cops don't know if he's reaching in to get a gun or something, or the car itself becomes a weapon because he can hurt the police officers. Again, he had an arrest warrant out for him, and he should have simply complied, and he didn't. And now he's dead.
You know, there's a kind of a deep irony in it. I saw the videotape, and my opinion is that the female cop is an affirmative action hire,
Yes,
and
another,
she
and yeah.
simply didn't have the right training or mindset. And I thought she simply panicked. And I do believe that her story when she says I was, trying to get the taser out, because I think that would be protocol. I'm not an expert in it, but that I would imagine. Since Dante hadn't drawn a gun, but he was trying to escape, I think then you are supposed to try to taser the individual. And I don't understand if they knew his arrest warrant, what it was for, because the aggravated assault would be something that would put a police officer, if he knew about that, aggravated robbery, because they would know that what that meant is, there was violence, that Dante drew a gun on the guy he was trying to steal money from. So if the cop knew that, then you have you
But
just
by the way,
match.
it was a woman, so just like much like George Floyd, who stuck a gun into the abdomen of a pregnant woman, this guy was pointing a gun at a woman. So another fine, outstanding gentleman.
But anyway, so it's just a it's a these statistical rarities, because I was asked what is the number of black Americans shot by white policemen in a year, and I think I wish I could recall this data point. I believe it was like 10 or 11.
Yeah, a 13, I think, was the number. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And it was just so small that
Yeah.
But if you look at the media, it's as if it's happening on an hourly basis.
And I think thousands of blacks shoot blacks a year.
For sure.
I think 2,000 more died in 2020 with the ensuing mayhem and a lot of this that the black George Floyd and Black Lives Matter protesters sort of brought in. But that doesn't seem to matter as much.
No, and if you're a Black Lives Matter administrator, you will, of course, live with the people, right? Because that's you believe in their cause and you're one of them. You'd never go and try to find like a residence in a collection of white supremacists, would you?
No, because apparently, if you listen to the rhetoric and their complaints, black, white people must be awful people, devils. Because, but nevertheless, the moment one can afford it, where do black people move? To predominantly white neighborhoods, right? And this is
Well,
this.
the BLM administrator, the woman, I
Yes.
forget her name, but she moved to Topanga Canyon.
Yeah, it was
Jim.
Patrice Khan Cullors, age 37. She's a multimillionaire for
And
being an agitator.
I can speak of this with authority because I lived at Topanga Canyon for a while. It's all white. I
So
mean,
it
yeah,
must be
they're.
really be bad there, because white people are really, really bad, right? That must be awful there.
Yeah, and it's a strange place. It's a mixture of 60s refugees and really expensive homes. So you've got very wealthy people living next to broken down geodesic domes, but everybody's white. And so the idea that if you look at the BLM mission statement, that this individual would choose Topanga Canyon, I mean, it really does underline the hypocrisy of the whole thing.
Well, I mean, she's just one of many grifters, civil rights, grifters, racial, hustlers. She's look at the Jesse Jackson, his family, and his con. He hasn't been in the, I mean, he's very old now. I guess he's close to, I think he'll be 80 next year. But I mean, his family, wealthy. Look at Reverend Al Sharpton, who's also an FBI informant.
Yeah, I know.
Multi-millionaire. By the way, he never paid out on judgment laid against him because he apparently does not have income. So yeah, this is an old game. Obviously, it's the Black Lives Matter is yet to be audited, by the way, despite taking in, what, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars
Ten,
last year.
no, 1.7 billion.
1.7
Billion, yes. That's the correct data, incidentally. I've got that accurate. 1.7 billion.
And no one's auditing this thing? I mean, this operation,
Well, that would be white supremacy.
yeah, that would be, yes, because of course math, yeah, you could say accounting is white supremacy. But it's not. I'm not surprised at this at all. Obviously, it's a grift at one level. It's just a con there. It's as they say, every what was it? Every mass movement becomes a business. Every movement, mass movement, starts out as a business, becomes an industry, then it's a con or something. I forget what that quote is, but something like that. So that's what this is. I mean, it's
I have a question. Now, I've heard a number of BLM black administrators, and executives talk, and they seem like they're very, smart cultural Marxists. They've like been to anthropology classes for 15 years or longer. Now, my question is this: when they look at the 1.6 billion and they see like, Coca-Cola and Amazon Microsoft, what do they think that these corporations want? I mean, do they think that these corporations are somehow white supremacists but are like turning the other cheek or something? I mean, it just seems so absurd that they don't question the motives of the corporations that are coughing up all these hundreds of millions of dollars.
I think they see the dollars.
Yeah, guess so.
That's not gonna, it's not gonna make you question these things when the money comes rolling in. So what if I'm a proxy? I'm a well-paid proxy. I started an interesting discussion with Tucker Carlson and Britt Hume, and they were talking about this roundtable meeting of businesses. They were all coordinating their efforts to lobby against election laws, integrity election laws, particularly the one in Georgia. And why would all these corporations, which are historically on some of these specific political issues, are neutral? Usually they will lobby or get involved in a particular issue that affects them, like corporate income tax or some sort of regulatory proposal law. But in this case, they're wading into election law reform or laws. Why are they doing this?
Well, and also then, and their two focuses right now are, well, three is Black Lives Matter Antifa support, getting rid of any kind of real election process, and transgender. I mean, why, when did America's corporation develop these three interests,
Or the NCAA, or you think they want to preserve women's sports, or why are they even involved in something, so wacky? But Britt Hume goes, he says it's them trying to, they see the government being taken over, by a leftist administration. They're in power, so they're trying to, I guess, court favor with them, which I don't see that at all. I think that's, again, that's a
No.
left-right paradigm excuse. I think it's a broadly cultural agenda that they're achieving because they want to, atomize society and create what they call Trannaseries. And,
Yeah, they were supporting those 3 points long before Biden was elected.
And so this isn't really a new thing. And the fact that they would get on the cultural Marxist thing and back policies that further erode elections. This is a broader assault on sovereignty and historical America because they're transnationalist and corporations. Why were they be so concerned with an election law in Georgia or any other state for that matter? And why would they be involved in misrepresenting it in such a way? Because it's very, actually the law itself is very mild. It's not what it's being characterized at all. It's nonsense.
I think it's clarifying because the public can see that it's fascism, that these corporations may look like businesses, but actually they're just part of the malevolent government.
The corporation, which operates in each one of these states, are given state charters. So you'd think that they exist at the pleasure of the government because the government can rescind that state charter. But it shows that what's happened with it shows the crisis, and we've talked about this, is the crisis of self-government throughout the United States and the West in general, is that these corporations are more powerful than the governments. And of course, these corporations don't even nominally represent the people, but yet they're actively involved in what laws are passed and what laws are not passed, or what the cultural agenda is and what accountability they have to the people. They're advocating policies which will fundamentally change life in these states, and there's no accountability for it. And again, government is the institution which makes the rules and enforces the rules, and apparently they're the ones that are making rules and enforcing rules. They can come in and blackmail governments and force them, get them not to sign a bill or veto a bill or not to pass an amendment or to pass an amendment. It's Marc Benioff. Or it's the chairman of of Coca-Cola or whoever happens to hang out at Davos every year. They're the ones that are exerting pressure on these
Well,
governments.
I mean, it's obvious that a secret society has taken control of government and is using it as a tool against the people. I mean, that's just our basic real truth in America, is that, it looks like the government is created by the people. This is incorrect. The government is created by the secret society above the government, and it's a Judeo-Masonic tribe that wants world domination and wants Georgia Guidestone population. When you look at the different aspects that can be used to verify that, Building 7's collapse, you can see that we're in a process of being genocided, and so we have the situation where we have an illegitimate government. Our government is as illegitimate as, I mean, you name one, the German Nazi government ruling France, the Vichy. I mean, there isn't a government that has ever existed that was is less legitimate than what the ones that we have in the United States. They are supposed to derive their authority from their desire to protect our inalienable rights. And yet soon there's going to be a mandatory RNA creating vaccine inside our bodies. So, which will be at the end of a long process that exposes their, that the government is lying. The candidates lie to us that we don't know who they are. We don't know the oaths they've taken, the societies they're part of. And so, we have to, the people have to develop inside our own connections inside our families, inside our ethnicities, and find everything that we know about that we can connect to. We have to develop our own strength because we can be sure that going forward, it's just going to get worse. I mean, the COVID lockdown, set up this vaccine debacle. Well, those who don't take the vaccine can be assured they're going to be an even There'll be more trials ahead because they will not just say, "Oh, that's fine, just be happy and live out your life without taking a vaccine." it's they're going to be coming after us. And so, it's just it's a question of how will we defend ourselves?
Well, there was interesting story this past week regarding immigration. Tucker Carlson, I think, devoted a couple of shows to this issue about replacement immigration. And that really bothered a lot of people. He did a segment on it, and he had to, of course, do a response segment because he was accused of being racist and anti-Semitic and everything for pointing out, the objective of Biden's open door or open immigration policy. It's here's what Tucker said. He says, "I know that the left and all the little gatekeepers on Twitter become literally hysterical if they use the term replacement. If you suggest that the Democratic Party is trying to replace the current electorate, the voters now casting ballots with new people, more obedient voters from the third world, but they become hysterical because that's what's happening, actually." Let's just say if that's true, if look, if there was a, if this was happening in your house, if you were in the sixth grade, for example, and without telling you, your parents adopted a bunch of new siblings and gave them a brand new bikes and let them stay up late later, helped them with their homework and give them twice the allowances that they gave you, you would say to your siblings, I think we're being replaced by kids who aren't who that our parents love more, and it would be kind of hard to argue against you because look at the evidence. So this matters on a bunch of different levels. But on the most basic level, it is a voting rights question. In a democracy, one person equals one vote. If you change the population, you dilute your political power, the political power of the people who live there. So every time they import a new voter, I'd become disenfranchised as a current voter. So I don't understand. I mean, everyone wants to make a racial. Everyone wants to make a racial issue out of it. Oh, white replacement. No. This is a voting rights question. I have less political power because you're importing a brand new electorate. Why should I sit back and take that? The power that I have as an American, guaranteed at birth, is one man, one vote, and they're diluting it. No, they're not allowed to do that. Why are we putting up with this? So at least one prediction came true right away. All those little gatekeepers on Twitter did become hysterical. They spent the last 4 days jumping up and down, furiously trying to once again to pull the show off the air. Once again, they will fail, though it's amusing to see them keep at it. So I mean, that's what he says. Yeah, then he goes on to say, but why all the anger? If someone says something you think is wrong, is your first instinct to hurt them? Probably not. Normal people don't respond that way. If you hear something you think is incorrect, you try to correct it. But getting the facts right is hardly the point of this exercise. The point is to prevent unauthorized conversations from starting in the first place. Shut up, racist. No more questions. You've heard that before. So that I can go on here, but he tends to treat it sort of as a sort of a civic nationalist voting rights issue. But he does point out like how certain states have changed with the changing demographics. Life has changed. He points out that California in the 1960s was 90% white. Now it's only 30% white because the people were replaced with immigration, and it's changed. And it's made I think California, I think they have a higher poverty rate than Mississippi now. So it's changed. It's the quality of life issue. He points out that Kamala Harris accused Donald Trump of trying to change the country by altering the demographics by enforcing immigration law. He says, so she admits that immigration affects the demographics and the politics, but she accuses by D Donald she accused Donald Trump of enforcing the law by fighting illegal immigration of changing the demographics. But again, you turn that argument around on them, then you're a racist. So they admit that it's having this effect. So it was an interesting, I list a couple shows on Tucker Carlson. He talked about replacement migration. He's immediately accused by all the usual suspects of being racist. The Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith came out, condemned, called his show to be canceled, accused him of being anti-Semitic, although he didn't mention anything about Jews in the talk. But I guess they infer it to be anti-Semitic. So it was an interesting a segment, a couple segments he did, and the reaction was even more interesting because. They say that this was it was Michael Kinsley who once said that a gaffe is when a politician accidentally tells the truth. And so you can say this is a guy, he's telling the truth about this issue, spinning in a certain way, which protects him because he doesn't bring in the racial issue, although he is dog whistling because he refers to the middle class people being replaced, and also talks about the decline of the white population in California. He also talks about internal migration, like how people leaving states from California going into like Colorado or Idaho and changing life in there, and that itself is a problem. But he says in the United States, that's legal. What we have, with immigration, you have illegal immigration being used to, again, to flood the electorate, to change the politics of the country. He points out like states like Virginia, which has been affected by this too. Although I think a lot of the blueing of Virginia is also can be attributed to high income white liberals in the northern part of the state, as much as it is to illegal immigration. But again, it was interesting to see Tucker taking on this issue, because it is something that they don't want people considering, because this something like this can cause the white majority, which is still just over 60%, to sort of cohere or organize behind, because they see themselves being threatened.
Well, when they see it as malevolent, mm-hmm. which it in fact is, I mean, even in California, the actual data right now is 36% white and 15% Asian. And they tend, those two groups, to have overlapping. And then, of course, you've got a lot of conservative Latinos. I think there's 39% of the state Latinos. But mm-hmm. you have a large fraction of Catholics, and quite a few of them are, they represent the conservative cohort in California, because so many of the whites are cultural Marxists.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see why they would rather not have this, issue flare up, because it could coalesce, the conservative Latinos, the Asians, and the conservative whites into a majority.
Well, that was why that you had that Asian hate campaign, I think.
Yeah,
implying that it was like a white supremacy thing, when it was quite something very different.
Yeah, divide and conquer.
Yeah,
but you can see that I think that the term is really useful because of the word replacement. It brings to mind the fact that whites are being evaporated in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We're being replaced, but we don't go to heaven. We just somehow go out of existence. We're gone. So this is, something that is a concept that is close to, or at least may lead to, the idea of genocide. And I think that's something that,
well, the term white genocide is thrown around too by white supremacists.
Of course, they always talk about white supremacy. This is the distraction, but that is the distraction of the white genocide. That mm-hmm. term is meant to distract from what's really happening. And of course, with the vaccine and the budget to go after NASCAR and country music, you can see that they're hoping to vax as many of the ethnic Europeans as they can. But like Carlson's his show, I thought it was, it's useful and certainly accurate, but I think ultimately it just distracts, because he doesn't get into the idea of, when he talks about the voting aspect of it. I mean, this is absolutely true,
mm-hmm.
but it's really not voting that the oligarchs are trying to control, because Tim, as we saw in the last election,
it doesn't matter.
they can just, I mean, the voting, the idea that this is something they're trying to manipulate with demographics. I'm sorry. They've got control over the adding machines now, so there's nothing for them to worry about.
Well, what matters is sort of the anti-white hate campaign that you saw at the corporate level, entertainment, the cultural
sure.
thing. And so to do that, you have to you have to reduce the numbers. But it's all part of the psychological decapitation and humiliation that the white majority is being subjected to.
Right. And excuse me. And the fact is that if this was a one-off, you could maybe make the voting, the peculiarities to the U.S. electoral college system, some argument along those lines. But the fact is, every single place where Europeans were the majority, at the, say in 1970, is having replacement immigration. I mean, everywhere.
Well, this
Sweden.
was something that that the 1965 immigration law, which rescinded the nationality standard, there was it wasn't supposed to. In fact, they guaranteed this, that it would not change the demographics of the country, which means that people back then were alert to the importance of demographics, ethnic demographics, that you would change the country's culture and politics if you changed its ethnic demographics. And so this is why the law was, it was how the law was passed, but it was obviously something more malevolent because activism to change the 1924 law was a 40-year campaign that was waged by the usual suspects to change that, to
Yeah, I
change,
mean,
I mean, and it was admitted that the law, immigration law, had to be changed to change the demographics because it was Elliot Abrams who admitted that the Jews saw the United States as a intrinsically hostile and country because of its demographics, and ha that had to be changed. And liberalized or mass mi immigration was one way of doing that. Other
of
was
course.
the cultural war. One thing is convincing whites to become degenerate and to have smaller families, right? It's not as if whites are helpless victims here. They've embraced the culture of Marxism and the hedonism, which is also contributing greatly to their eclipse.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was part of the plan to destroy them. I mean, we've gone through the trajectory a lot so many times. I mean, you just go to the Frankfurt School and the development of cultural Marxism, and then to the American Jewish Committee, which had so many members from the Frankfurt School. You look at how it relates to MK Ultra and the authoritarian personality pseudoscience gets out into the sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture that's being animated by a lot of MK Ultra employees. And then you're now in a process where the moral structure of the ethnic Europeans are being destroyed. And then here comes the iPhone and pornography, which is being developed by the same group that developed the rock and roll world, in San Francisco in the 1960s. So, it was an organized attack. It's very easy to see in hindsight. You can see how, for example, how Bill Gates fits into it.
And of
It's
course, immigration, at least internal immigration, we call this migration, played a big part in this. And this is all part of, again,
absolutely.
weaponized migration, because you had this great movement of blacks from the South. One would be like from the Mississippi Delta region into Chicago, into Detroit, or your people from North Carolina, Georgia, into Philadelphia. This was done to break up the ethnic neighborhoods, particularly the Catholic ones, to create suburbia, to create the deracinated white population, which is now being assaulted and has no real position to stand on, apparently. But the you know again this is you again integration is used, blacks are used as proxies and to create this situation. So it isn't the first time this has been used historically. I mean, because this is how the social engineers see things. America had a nationalities problem, had these ethnic groups, these ethnic enclaves, which were considered suspect in their loyalty towards the big plan, which is the American century. And this was part of this is the WASP Jewish Alliance that was formed in the mid part of the 20th century. Although the immigration issue seems to be primarily a Jewish operation, to change the immigration laws. So these are stacked operations. Then, and perhaps at some point or another, because of other things, the Jewish part of this deal has become more powerful or ascendant in
Well,
recent
sure
years,
seems
recent
to.
decade.
But I mean, I've always thought it's like a Judeo-Masonic. That's the term I use because when you look at history, you see the Masons. And then when you look at cultural Marxism, you see the Jews. But somehow the DNA always is the same in terms of their politics. And so the best explanation is that it's a centrifugal, group that has ways of staying in existence and keeping things secret. And that's why the current situation is just should be seen by every European as so absolutely dangerous, because you really can't let this group come up with a pseudo rationale to put a real virus, to put a real vaccine into your body. It's just not a sane, no sane person who understands our history would permit this, because you simply can't trust this group. You have to assume malevolence. The idea of letting, tall Zach and the Israeli microbiologists have access to your RNA. I'm sorry, this just isn't a coherent, idea. It's just not a good one. We've got to resist it somehow.
It's interesting because Tucker talks about the voting and the civic nationalist appeals, these things. It's about voting rights, but there is the racial or ethnic issue here. Is we were given this idea that America is a creedal nation, a proposition nation, and the theory there is that anybody, if they embrace the American ideals, the American creed, and ideas of the Constitution, become an American. And in theory, it sounds terrific. And it may work at some time, but it may not work all the time. But there is a problem if you look at some of these ideals. What define America? Americans, you think of like the right to free speech, the right to private property, relative limited government, low taxes, to own a business, and these things. And if they've done polling, and if you look at the immigration, how it's changed up until since 1965, immigration has stressed. Accepting people from Latin America first, then Africa, then Asia. And a lot of this is also sort of blowback from America's geopolitical, foreign wars like the Vietnam War, these things. And of course, Europe is suffering from, NATO's wars or the destabilization efforts in the Middle East, where it creates this migration crisis in Europe, which then creates the situation where now those ethnic states must come to an end, become diverse and pluralistic and enriched, as they say. But England was another part, where, when they gave up their empire, they didn't send the third worlders back. They kept them, and now they have a growing problem now with that. But the of course, none of this. People would never get a chance to vote on this. It was their betters made the decisions for them on these issues. But the idea that you can have these ideas and anyone can be an American, but they've done polling on this. If you look at the ideas like the First Amendment, free speech, speech codes, gun ownership, taxes, is that people who come from like Latin America, Asians and blacks, people from Africa, they don't think much of these things. They don't think much. They don't. Polling has showed there's not much support for First Amendment, not much support for gun ownership. There was an article a while back by Adam Winkler, who is a UCLA law professor. This was about the NRA, particularly the gun issue. The article is the NRA will fail. I've mentioned this before. The NRA will fail, and it's inevitable. And the reason why is because the demographics is that the Second Amendment is primarily it's a white thing. It's white people who support it in mass, and Asians, Latinos, and blacks don't really support it. Same with things like free speech. And his point was, as demographics switch or change, and the white majority dwindles. Support for these laws or for these amendments to the Constitution aren't going to be there, and the nation's politics is going to change. And this is implied in all these things when they talk about the browning of America and the culture changes and the political changes that it portends. It's sort of this inevitability thing with the changing of the nation's ethnicity or the of its color, the dwindling of the white majority. If this is indeed true, then it does matter. Demographics do indeed matter. Is that although America may be a proposition nation, but it's only its heritage white majority which really holds to those propositions. And as you flood the country with people from the third world or developing world or Latin America or the African continent, you're not going to have support for these things. You're not going to have the cultural support for these things. They're not going to identify with heritage America, and the American system will collapse, its ideals. So, in the end of the day, the proposition nation is an ethnic nation. It relies on ethnicity,
Of
much of
course.
it, you know. So then we're getting back to it. Does ethnicity does matter? And this was originally recognized. I think the first immigration law was with the 1792 or 1790, when they called for white men of good character. They were aware of this thing. But again, as you flood the nation with, especially the rate of immigration, it's going to have this cultural change. And they're admitting it, and they admit the argument when they write articles like this, when they talk about this change America is going to have, that we're no longer going to have these things like First Amendment rights or the Second Amendment rights because America is browner. So what's the white majority who respects these, who still identifies and wants to maintain these political institutions, these rights? What are they to do other than try to reverse their demographic decline, if it does indeed mean the radical change in the nation's politics and the collapse of, of historical America?
Yeah, the destruction of ethnic awareness and pride hadn't gotten far enough when they actually changed the immigration law to not talk about the importance of ethnicity. I mean, I'm sure you've seen how they claimed that it wasn't going to change ethnicity.
Yes, they
I mean,
promised
now
that,
this.
yeah.
So this was absolutely essential as part of the passing of the bill, and of course it was a complete lie. They knew perfectly well what they were going to do, but because there was still enough sort of ethnic coherency inside the country that was European, they had to give lip service to it. And it's very interesting to read the actual document because. They make this case that there just won't be any ethnic change, even though they changed the criteria by who was going to be permitted in under what fractions, So anyway, I think we can safely say that we have been systematically attacked, and that when Tucker brings up the idea of replacement. Immigration, he's absolutely correct. It is replacement, but I don't think he goes far enough in terms of identifying the cause of it. The cause is not to affect electoral change. They control, the Electoral College is simply a joke at this point. This is it's just it is being done, unfortunately. What I am concerned about is that. I mean, there's several things you can conjecture. I mean, one is they expect a large reduction in the population of the United States over the next few years because of the vaccine, and so this is literally a replacement immigration. The other is that it's just a way to breed Europeans out of existence.
Yeah. Well, they want a more compliant,
Yeah.
population. I mean, they it was even Tucker cited this, and this is maybe what sparked the anti-Semitic accusation from Greenblatt, who sees anti-Semitism everywhere. Of course, he has to. That's his business, the ADL. They has to be everywhere for them to maintain their fundraising. But he cited an article by Michelle Goldberg at the New York Times. The article was, "We can replace them." Now, who is we and who is them? And there's that word replace. So it's a sense of figure. And of course, what's a large driver is the rate of non-white, non-European immigration into the country, both illegal and illegal. I
Yeah,
mean.
I was glad she made, yeah, I mean, I was glad she made that, remark because it just clarified things so
Yes,
much.
thank you, Michelle. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that should be very clarifying for all the Europeans is that the idea here is to replace us. It's just that simple. There's really not any kind of confusion about it. So this was useful, and the question is. Is we've got to a position here, Tim, where clarity is increasing every day. Every day, things are just getting clearer and clearer. Who's running the country, what their intentions are, and so the question really is how to expedite it. How do we get it? How do we get the
Yeah.
information to be disseminated faster? And then, what do we do with the information? Okay, we're getting genocided. What do we do, folks?
Did you like how Tucker called out the ADL's hypocrisy? He goes, he cited the ADL's website. With historically high birth rates among Palestinians and a possible influx of Palestinian refugees and their descendants now living around the world, Jews will quickly become a minority in a binational state, thus ending any semblance of equal representation and protections. In this situation, the Jewish population would be politically and potentially physically vulnerable. It is unreasonable and unrealistic to expect the Jewish population to expect the state of Israel to voluntarily subvert its own sovereign existence and national identity and become a vulnerable minority in what was once its own territory. Wow. Now, not only are we faced with immigration of non-white, non-Europeans, but also we're seeing this anti-hating whitey campaign. And so when whites are still in the majority and they, we versus them, in terms of Michelle Goldberg's language, they feel strong enough to do that now. How will whites be treated when they're 40% or 35%? Well, look at South Africa, if you get an idea.
Well, and look at the Palestinians. I
Yes.
mean, this will be our fate because those of us that survive, because we were discussing before the show, well, how far down into the ranks does the kind of hatred of Europeans, go with these groups? And we were conjecturing that it may not go too far because they seem to have to use propaganda among the, hoi polloi Jews to keep them perhaps in check. So it may be kind of on a need to know basis, but it's actually irrelevant in terms of the political reality because they're going to manipulate everybody, the secret society, and you can see how Europeans are going to be treated, and who's going to say no to that? So it's up to us to stop it now,
And there was a interesting analysis by Kevin MacDonald on Tucker Carlson's piece, and he was talking. Part of the article, he talks about, of course, we're talking about who's doing this. Of course, the Jewish role in this cannot be overlooked. Of course, that's why ADL was so alerted by Tucker Carlson's piece. But Kevin MacDonald had this piece where he wrote that the long history of Jewish efforts to replace white population in America. So the point being that the organized Jewish community has long had the aim of diluting the white population of the United States, motivated by fear and loathing of the white population. The culture critique is the erection of an adversarial culture that is hostile to the traditional white population of the United States. Jewish activists on immigration rejected the ethnic status quo put in place by the 1924 and 1952 immigration laws. Otis Graham notes that the Jewish lobby on immigration was not only the most effective force in enacting the 1965 law, their activism was aimed at not just at open doors for Jews, but also for diversification of immigration stream sufficient to eliminate the majority status of Western Europeans, so that a fascist regime in America would be more unlikely. So there's that authoritarian personality idea. The motivating role of fear and insecurity on part of the activist Jewish community thus differed from other groups and individuals promoting the end to the national origins provisions of the 1924 and 1952 laws. Let me see here. Sorry. Yeah, Stuart Sofkin shows that the sense of uneasiness and insecurity pervaded American Jewry in the wake of World War II, even in the face of evidence of anti-Semitism, had declined to the point that it had become a marginal phenomenon. As a direct result, the primary objective of the Jewish intergroup relations agency, the American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Congress, and the ADL after 1945, was to prevent the emergence of an anti-Semitic reactionary mass movement in the United States. So there's that obsession. Writing long after the passage of the 1965 law, prominent Jewish social scientist, ethnic activist Earl Raab remarked very positively on the success of American immigration policy in altering the ethnic composition of the United States. Writing for a Jewish publication, Raab noted that the Jewish community had taken a leadership role in changing the Northwestern European bias of American immigration policy, and he also maintained that one factor inhibiting the anti-Semitism in the contemporary United States is an increasing ethnic heterogeneity as a result of immigration has made it even more difficult for a political party or mass movement of bigotry to develop. Similarly, Elliot Abrams noted that the American Jewish community clings to what is at bottom a dark vision of America as a land permeated with anti-Semitism, as always on the verge of anti-Semitic outburst. This is interesting. In 1952, President Truman's President Commission on Immigration and Naturalization, PCIN, pointedly noted that the 1924 legislation has succeeded in maintaining the racial status quo, and the main barrier to changing the racial status quo was not the national origin system, because there was already a high level of non-quota immigrants, and because the countries of northern Western Europe did not fill their quotas. They weren't even filling their quotas. The report notes that the main barrier to changing the racial status quo was the total number of immigrants. The PCIN thus viewed the changing racial status quo of the United States as a desirable goal, and to that end made a major point of desirability of increasing the total number of immigrants This is 1953. This is interesting. Chairman of the PCIN was Philip B. Perlman, Jewish, and the staff of the commission contained high percentage of other Jews, headed by Harry N. Rosenfeld, executive director, Elliot Shirk, assistant executive director. The report was wholeheartedly endorsed by the American Jewish Congress. The proceedings were printed as the report, Whom Shall We Welcome? And the cooperation of Emanuel Seller, from Hart Seller, and with the essay Oscar Hanlon, the Jewish academic activist. So that was the objective. The American Jewish Congress, the largest American Jewish organization at the time, testified during the Senate hearings in 1952 law that the 1924 legislation has succeeded in preserving the ethnic balance of the United States, but it commented, the objective is valueless. There's nothing sacrosanct about a composition of a population, about the population in 1920. So there you have it.
I mean, when you read that, I was thinking, what if the retort to that had simply been the same one that was used as the rationale to prevent, Palestinians becoming a majority in Israel?
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
if you just read that statement,
compare it to the ADLs, what they have on their website.
Yeah.
I mean, so there you go.
The hypocrisy simply couldn't be more vivid, and it's hypocrisy with its, sophistry. They say this stuff, but in fact, they don't believe it.
But this is why, I mean, you're saying when Tucker Carlson gives a speech about civic nationalist voting rights, of course, the consequence of dealing with the issue from the ADL's perspective is the same way that they view free speech, immigration restriction, or concerns about ethnic balances, it is anti-Semitic to the extent that they see it as contrary to their interest. Anything that's contrary to their interest or inhibiting their acquisition or maintenance of power or influence, in their mind, is anti-Semitic, because they're so insulated, or they're so self-centered. Their lack of self-reflection, or in these things, and they see it as in terms of power, ethnic power. So they're fighting an ethnic warfare, while it's ultimate psychological warfare. It's like right out of Sun Tzu or something. It's like, why you have the enemy even that doesn't even acknowledge that there is a war.
Exactly. It is. It's just a. It's mind control to enact the Georgia Guidestones without anyone complaining. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Their rationale is ridiculous. It is not, it's not a serious argument. It's just mind control. And it'd be a good idea and a good time to start resisting it, huh?
Yep. Well, I think we covered it, Joe.
I think we have, Tim. It's going to be another exciting week coming up.
So, we'll prepare for show 200. So,
yeah, that's right. It's 200.
Yeah.
Hey, wow. Who would ever thought it?
So, the bicentennial.
What state the country's in. All right.
So, our bicentennial show. So, okay.
Our bicentennial, indeed.
Okay. Good night, then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good night.